Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant, and my co-host, Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Every week, we present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information and bring it home to you and your family. With years of clinical experience between us and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, we give you practical information to help you take charge of your health. Welcome back. This is Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist, physician assistant, and we have an absolutely amazing show today. But it's just like we always say, it's a circle, it's a continuum. It's a continuum of how we began this show. So I'm going to give you a little bit of history of how this show began and then pass it to Carol because we have a guest, a very important guest, and we're going to analyze an article that came out in the Sunday Times called The Vicious Cycle, and it's about menopause. So when the Women's Health Initiative was announced, when they suddenly and abruptly stopped the study, naming multiple reasons that increased heart attack, increased breast cancer, increased blood clots, etc. It went on, no bone protection, and so they immediately stopped this very large national study that was supposed to go on for 8.5 years, and the doctor running the study said, in good conscience, she could not keep this study going. And as a result, many people, anybody who could talk, got on the radio to talk about the horrors of hormone replacement therapies and how dangerous they are, etc. Well, at that point, when we really looked at the studies, the changes were absolutely minuscule. And more than that, they were using synthetic hormones. And so what do you really expect when you're using a synthetic analog of a hormone and then trying to compare it and see how women react to it? And they didn't even differentiate the ages. So at that point, I was working extensively with natural hormones, and I contacted Bernard White and said, Bernard, you've got to let me on the radio. You've got to let me on the radio. We have to talk about this because this is so much misinformation. Well, he did, and that was the beginning of Take Charge of Your Health. And today we're going to discuss what natural hormones and hormones in relationship to menopause. And we're also going to discuss this article, which had some good points, but some major flaws in it. And we want to bring it up and let you see and understand. So, Carol, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks, Corinne. That's an interesting bit of history.
It is, 21 years ago.
So we have a guest today, Dr. David Rosensweet. And Dr. Rosensweet has been practicing as a holistic physician for decades. But in the last 30 years, he's really focused in on doing hormone therapies. And he's a bit of a legend. And he's even put together an institute of bioidentical medicine, and he's meeting with practitioners all the time because of the lack of everybody getting the education that they need to do this in a sane fashion. So Susan Dominus was the writer of this article. She's a staff writer for the New York Times, and she's a Pulitzer Prize winning author for another thing. So we asked Dr. Rosensweet to join us, and I think between the three of us, we've got somewhere between 90 and 100 years of hormone therapy. Welcome, Dr. Rosensweet. Now, you have worked tirelessly. You're also an author of a book about hormone therapy. When I sent you this article and said, please read it, and we'd love to have you come on the radio, what were your first impressions with this article?
Hi, Carolyn. Hi, Corinne.
Hello. Welcome.
And, thank you. Well, the thing I liked about the article, it was one of the longest narratives expressing some of the duress, just some of the duress, but a really good sampling of it that so many women go through in midlife when they lose some of the most powerful biochemicals in their body, the hormones that come out of the ovary. And of course, men have a similar thing when men lose testosterone and lose their erection, for example, among other things. It's a very very similar thing. And so I appreciated her being willing to narrate in a good writer's fashion the duress. And on the other hand, I was dismayed that though she had dived deep into the Women's Health Initiative, that 2002 study that scared providers and women all over the planet, and was really misinterpreted entirely, because even in the original article itself, it did not declare that there was statistically significant increased risk, even with horse urine derived estrogens and an artificial progestin, which is known to be a problematic molecule. Even these women did not have a statistically significant increased risk. That was right in the original article, but that was bypassed. It exploded out into the press, and it frightened everyone away from hormones. There, 40% of American women were on hormones in 2002, and that dropped to the low millions. And the really tremendous adverse consequences of that. What I was dismayed about is she had even gone so far as to look at the work of an oncologist, Avram Blooming, and Carol Tavris, their research partner, called Estrogen Matters, that they really go in and dive deep into the risk information. And they did a great job of it. So for anyone who's concerned about risk, Estrogen Matters is the Bible. And what Blooming and Tavris conclude, well, I'm going to pause here, but Carol and Corinne, if you'd like, I'd like to give a summary of what the actual conclusions were that this New York Times author never really discussed. And then there was other things she didn't discuss. She didn't discuss the state of the art of treating women in menopause with compounded bioidentical hormones. But so two things they didn't, I just couldn't get excited about the article.
And even I think I'd like you maybe to do a mention on Estrogen Matters, because you reached out to the author about this. Estrogen Matters does document the safety of hormones, but he actually doesn't just stick with hormones. He's an advocate of Premarin and even Provera, the progestin that was used in the Women's Health Initiative. And he simply doesn't find the risks that the Women's Health Initiative was warning. But you met Dr. Bunting, and tell us what he had to say.
Well, I was so impressed with the book that I actually flew out to L.A. to meet up with him and spend time with him. And he's a consummate physician. He and I disagreed rather dramatically about compounded bioidentical hormones, but we have an active conversation going on where his great work is in exposing the falseness of even the original WHI report. And then what people totally overlook in this author of the New York Times article, that the original WHI study committee published in 2017 in the original journal, the Journal of the American Medical Association, an article that I call the retraction of the WHI, in which they state that after 18 years of follow-up, and I'm quoting very close to the exact language, there is no increased risk of breast cancer, heart attack, and stroke from the treatment, and this was about Premarin and Prempro. So they retract their original statement. So Dr. Blooming knows that, and what I mean, could I give the summary of what I see risk, including from Dr. Please. Blooming and all the literature that you, Carol, has dived into and you know about, and anyone who really cares about this subject knows about, is the way I like to put it is we're all at risk for thousands of diagnoses as human beings. And some of those diagnoses are not okay. They're really troublesome. But as we're all at risk for hundreds of cancers, and as a male, I'm at risk, increased relative risk for prostate cancer, and there's reasons for that. And women have an increased relative risk for getting breast cancer, and there's reasons for that. But taking all that into consideration, women who are treated with hormones are at less risk for breast cancer, heart attack, and stroke than women who are not treated with hormones. Even women who are at special risk, those women who've had breast cancer and have had that breast cancer properly treated, they are at an increased relative risk for recurrence in contrast to a young woman who's never had breast cancer. However, those women who've had breast cancer, if they're treated with hormones, they're at less risk for breast cancer than the women who go untreated. And there's more to the story, but that's what I'd really love the audience to hear very clearly. Less risk if you're treated with hormones, and that includes even Premarin and Prempro, molecules that at this day and age I would not prescribe, never have. But even the women who were on Premarin and Prempro, they did pretty well. They did a lot better than the women who did not receive the treatment.
Well, that's exactly the opposite of exactly the opposite of what we're told by most of the physicians that we go to get help from when we're having these problems. But what has happened, and what she even mentions in this article, is that, first of all, generally and very often, we've got a 15-minute visit. Second of all, because we have been so frustrated by the level of care that we've received when we're complaining about hot flashes or vaginal dryness or memory loss or insomnia, we've been so frustrated that we don't really bring it up to the doctor because I remember one of my patients went before the Women's Health Initiative, and she went in, and her doctor, her GYN, was literally yelling at her that she had to be on hormones because she had to protect her bones. The Women's Health Initiative came up, and she went in there and told him, you know, I'm on natural hormone therapies. And he started yelling at her, don't you understand? Hormones are dangerous. And she came back and she says, no way am I going off these hormones. But I had women calling my office crying. What do I do now? I'm so afraid. It was so frustrating. You must have had the same thing.
Yeah. And, you know, we're, even though it's 2023, the human consciousness is still very restricted and limited. And not the best things are occurring on this planet. And, you know, that also occurs in medicine. But slowly but surely, the truth will out. As Martin Luther King said, the vector of history bends towards justice, ultimately, and it's gradually emerging. Gradually, there's a recovery. There's, by 2016, even though the number of women on hormones was down to the low 1 millions, by 2016, it was back up to 6 million, and it's certainly higher now. So there is recovery, and Dr. Blooming and his work is filtering into the North American Menopause Society. They're lightening up. This is the main voice. So the improvement is taking place, and slowly but surely this poison is being antidoted.
Well, that's truly wonderful. So she goes into all the symptoms, the horrible symptoms women have trouble with, their memory. They're afraid of cancers. They maybe not having as good a bone turnover. They can't sleep, which is a huge thing. They have panic attacks and run to the hospital, and there's nothing wrong with them, nothing wrong with their heart at all, but they're experiencing all this anxiety. Once in a while goes into depression. Like, women find that their lives are really in disrepair. And I like to think of menopause as adrenal pause. Because as your ovaries stop producing an egg every month, we become more and more dependent on our adrenal glands. But those adrenal glands should be picking up the slack for the sex hormones, and the adrenal glands can't. We have been putting ourselves through so much stress. In the last few years, we have almost a miasm of fear and stress. I think it's getting worse. I before learned that about 80% of women who hit menopause, which is defined as a year without any cycles, any bleeding, are symptomatic, have symptoms. And the irony of all of this is we've put in all our years working with hormones, just as this Susan Dominus is saying, there are a lot of practitioners who have no training at all, don't have a clue what the hormones do, and all these symptoms that I just mentioned disappear magically because they are indeed signs of hormone deficiencies. And it's rather miraculous because the first time in human history, we have the means to top up these hormones with the same hormone that our body makes. And so when you top it up, you get relief from all this. And it's a travesty that the New York Times doesn't dig into all the other options for hormone therapies. It's huge. And we've all spent our careers really immersed in this. And I was a little saddened by this article that this is not general knowledge, or it was not general enough that Susan Dominus didn't pull it into her article. Needs to do a postscript where Corinne and I were talking about Paul Harvey and talk about the rest of the story.
No, well, that's what we're doing right now. Let's hear the rest of the story. That's very funny. But, you know, we've had so many between myself, you, Carol, patients who have so dramatically benefited. I remember one year, and this was when I was first working with natural hormone therapies, and I would go to these conferences and I'd hear how estriol works on this tissue, on the skin tissue, and how mild it is. And so I had an opera singer, because I was right there in the middle of the city, right by 57th, right near the opera hall, and who came into me, and her voice was changing. She didn't know where to go. She'd been to her voice teacher, this, that. Her voice was changing. It was changing because of hormonal changes. So I contacted my friendly pharmacist, who happened to be Carol at the time, And well, together we made up an estriol lozenge, which we had never heard of before, and gave it to her, and she sucked on it. And within a week and a half to 2 weeks, her voice was back, and she went to her voice teacher, who looked down her throat, and they could see the tissue changes. So back to a normal level, and she was able to reach the notes that she had been reaching prior. There's so much unnecessary suffering and discomfort that is going on by the fact that women are not aware of the full alternatives. And doctors, oh my goodness, they're afraid of hormones.
Yeah.
Not you.
I love that that story, because you're giving an example of a dramatic change from just replenishing hormones to a reasonable level. And because Carol and I have been on the front lines of this, and you have for so long, that's one story among millions. The changes, the loss of these hormones are so consequential. It's the primary reason why women and men wind up in nursing homes and assisted living facilities. Loss of muscle, loss of bone, loss of cognition, loss of arterial health. Most of this derives from the loss of hormones. And yet when you see someone who's on compounded bioidentical hormones, and Carol and I know we can walk down the street and we can tell you who's on the hormones and who is not.
Look at that tissue.
Anyone could. Yeah, a 10-year-old could, if you just point out the difference. What you're saying, Corinne, is giving a dramatic example, because it is dramatic to save bones and not get osteoporosis, to save muscles so that you don't lose your muscle and you wind up in a wheelchair and with adult diapers, to save cognition. Oh, my God, these are so dramatic. So I love the opera singer's story, and it's echoed through so many different systems, because these are the most powerful biochemicals in our bodies.
I heard from a nurse practitioner who spoke at a pharmacy conference, and I was astounded because she was just amazing. But she told me that the highest volume of sales of items in a pharmacy are the diaper things.
Yeah.
For incontinence. And this worries me. I just want to point out those really early signs of little dribbles when you laugh or you do some exercise. That already means that your hormones are low and you could treat it. And you'll get a rather dramatic response with that and completely finish the problem. That incontinence is the number one thing that takes people to nursing homes because their caretakers are just overwhelmed. And so they go into a nursing home and they're given drugs, and they're in the anticholinergic class of drugs, which happen to have some nasty side effects like dizziness and loss of balance. And the next thing you know, the person has fallen and broken something. Because they are low in hormones, their bone turnover is not proceeding like it should, and it's the end of them. So that little bit of dribble should not be ignored. And doctors never ask about it. And women, you need to be talking to your doctors about this. This is serious and easily remedied while you're younger.
Yeah, I love that. Women need to talk. You know, it's really interesting. We have to be the resource, men and women who know about this, we have to be the resource to wake up and inform the medical community. It's so unusual what happened in the medical community. While I was growing up as a doctor, medicine was differentiating out into specialties, urology, gynecology, orthopedic surgery, but it has not happened to menopause. And because of that Women's Health Initiative. So you're not meeting up with doctors who are trained in or specialize in the complexity and the importance of getting it right, these hormones. But that's changing. I mean, my God, Carol, when we started out, you would go to conferences. How many people were there? 10, 15. Yeah. And now we just left a conference where there was 5,000 physicians and nurse practitioners and compounding pharmacists and nutritionists and PAs who were very, very interested in hormones. So right. Times are changing. It's the tide is turning.
Well, that particular conference was the A4M, the Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine. So hormones are such an important pillar of a healthy lifespan. And now that we have the ability to top off our hormones, there's no reason not to do it. Do you want to age in a wheelchair, or do you want vibrancy and being an important part of society? Corinne?
Well, I've got two things. One was when this began about 2007, I had one young woman who came into me, younger woman, early menopause, and I put her on natural hormones and she felt very, very good. And her uncle was the head of GYN at Harvard. So she spent the weekend up there with him and told him that she was on natural hormones. And he said, oh, they're horrible. He said, you can't control them. There's no way you can control them. So she came back and said that to me. And I said, yes, I know. I said, if you are on this amount of hormones and your mother has to go into the ICU, you're probably going to end up with hot flashes. Why? Because you're under such tremendous stress and fear, you need more hormone. Or, you know, the body adjusts constantly. And that's what natural hormones allow you to do. And especially when you're using them topically, they allow you to increase and reduce as you need it, which is what I recommend for my patients. They say, am I on enough? And I look at them and I say, are you?
I just had that last night. You tell me.
This is about you. It's not about me. My dose is different than yours. And so that's the wonderful thing about natural hormones. And I remember one night I was really tired and I had a bunch of phone calls to make back, and they were questions about their hormones. And I said to myself, how do GYNs do this? Well, the way they do it is that they've got 100 people on the same dose, exactly the same dose. And if you don't fit into that dose, you don't get hormones because there's no way to adjust them. Whereas my patients, every single one of them is on a unique dose. It's unique to them and their needs. So they're asking questions, and so I have to pull their charts, see what they're on, so I can respond appropriately.
That is the wonderful thing about this science. The more patients you see and the deeper you go into the knowledge base, we see some basic points that are universal, and that is women are individuals. And what might suffice for one young woman to be healthy and fertile and regularly menstruate, another young woman could need 3 times as much estrogen to be healthy, young, fertile, and menstruate regularly. The individual variation just in one hormone alone is very significant. That's why it's so great that what we can do with compounded bioidentical hormones is we can individualize these prescriptions. We can tailor it precisely to a woman, and we can test to confirm that we're in the right amount, not too much and not too little. And we know what those numbers are. So that's one of the beauties of people who gain an expertise and experience. They have the opportunity to dial in to a clinical satisfaction and scientific medical precision optimal dosages that can carry women for a lifetime, pretty much.
I'd like to dive into progesterone a little bit and dive into perimenopause. Susan Dominus's focus really is menopause. But before that happens, before a year goes by with no cycle, women are already symptomatic and often severely so. And I follow a number of Facebook groups with women looking for hormone help. And I can't tell you the number of times women write that they go to their doctor, tell them these symptoms, which are the same that we've gone through, that can be just heartbreaking. And their doctors will say, "You're not in menopause yet, so I can't treat you." The hormone, the hormone that drops during peri, the first hormone that drops because you're not ovulating all the time, is progesterone, and you're experiencing a huge loss of progesterone. And then I'd like to also interject Dr. Jerry Lynn Pryor, who's been studying the menstrual cycle and osteoporosis and numerous things around this. And she found with a meta study that women have the highest amount of estrogen in their lifetime during perimenopause, which is surprising. But interesting enough, she's having trouble getting this work published because the conventional doctors will say it's estrogen that's the problem, when these symptoms, including most of these that Susan writes about, are progesterone deficient symptoms and needs to be addressed first and foremost, and then look for the estrogen symptoms that may still be there as you hit menopause. Estrogen does go down. And let's not forget about testosterone. In order of importance by amount that your body makes of these hormones, women produce the most progesterone, then testosterone, finally estrogen. And for some strange reason, conventional medicine has this mythology that women equals estrogen, when nothing could be further from the truth.
Yeah, I think some of the most significantly good we do in the long term is replenished testosterone, and all four actually would include DHEA or also thyroid. Yeah. this is wonderful work, and I love how you emphasize the perimenopause, Carol. So much good can be done the earlier you get at things, and that earlier and deeper fall in progesterone, even in women who are ovulating, their progesterone tends to decline earlier and deeper than the estrogen. Women can do so much good by getting topical progesterone and applying it even when you're regularly menstruating. If you're in your 30s and you're starting to experience breast tenderness or a return of PMS, or you're a little more cranky or upset or depressed, boy, getting that progesterone in early is a great thing. I say whenever a woman wakes up to wanting to get treated, okay, all the more power. But early on, Carol, as she's saying, it's so great for a young woman to learn about and get onto some progesterone as early as possible.
Well, I have a case that's directly in my family with my mother. When she was in her mid-60s, she'd call me up and we'd start talking. And my mother was literally one of the brightest people I ever met. She really understood English. She was very proud of it and how she spoke. Well, she'd speak in run-on sentences. Till finally I said, "Mom, what are you trying to say?" And so then I literally got off the phone, thought about it, and I sent her some thyroid. And without even looking at her blood tests, I sent her a low-level thyroid. And she got on it, and she cleared up, and her voice became clearer, and her sentences were more concise and direct. And then over the years, over the next 5 years, I got her on pregnenolone, DHEA, estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. She'd take it every single day. And so she'd go in when she was 90, 95, she'd go in and get a blood test. And her doctors would say, well, this is the best looking blood test. I wish my 23-year-olds would have blood tests like this. And so she'd be very proud. She said, well, my daughter has me on, and she'd list pregnenolone, DHEA, testosterone. And the doctor would look at her and say, oh, that's not necessary. You can just get off of all of that. And she'd leave the office, and she'd say, no way. They had no appreciation that that was creating all of these good things that they were seeing right down to her bones, 95 years old. And her doctor said she had the bones of a young person. So there was no appreciation for what they were seeing.
Beautiful work.
Yeah. I'd like to talk about heavy bleeding. I didn't mention that yet. And
very important.
This is also a big problem with perimenopause, to have really heavy bleeds. And I've even worked with young women who would go get blood transfusions. So this is so important. There is something like 700,000 hysterectomies being performed in the United States every year. And most of these are a progesterone deficit. In the first part of the cycle, the follicular stage, from day one, first day of bleeding, to mid-cycle, day of ovulation, estrogen builds up tissue in the endometrium. And many, many doctors fail to recognize that progesterone is also very abundant in the follicular phase. This is not made by the ovaries. This is made by the adrenal glands mainly. And that is able to control the amount of buildup in the endometrium. When there's excessive stress and that is depleted because your body makes extra cortisol to deal with stress, you're going to start having these huge layers build up in the endometrium. So in order to avoid that whole scenario, all the way to a hysterectomy, removing the uterus and ovaries too often, let's just throw them in for good measure, and creating a life-shortening scenario and a miserable life, because these doctors will then give you estrogen only, maintaining the problem that you started out with and failing to address that progesterone deficiency. So mostly these surgeries could be avoided if doctors would identify the progesterone deficit and help women out. You don't have to have heavy bleeding. Absolutely not.
Absolutely. Progesterone is crucial for maintaining a thin, nice, youthful endometrial lining, and without progesterone, that endometrium can overgrow. I'm just echoing what you're saying, Carol, because I heard that number of hysterectomies. And, you know, removing the uterus is routine, as it has been, is not fun, and it's not healthy. And, you know, going through a surgery when it could be prevented by some topical progesterone, you and I just, our eyebrows just almost go up to our hairline when we think about how easily it would be to prevent so much of that excessive bleeding. Not 100% of it, but close to it, and thus prevent an early hysterectomy that was totally unnecessary.
So doctors are inserting the Mirena coil to help women with heavy bleeding. Do you have any opinions on that, Dr. Rosensweet?
Well, you know, Mirena has that artificial, not bioidentical, progestin in it. And I'm not a fan of doing that procedure. You know, there's two elements to that. An IUD that does not have progestin in it can be a very effective birth control measure. There's very few failures. So I like the thought of an IUD, but why the doctor is inserting the Mirena, if I've got this correct, is to deliver that progestin in artificial progesterone, when it's so easy to give pure progesterone, the same molecule that a woman's ovary produces. It's so easy to give it in a skin cream or gel or oils formulation, or to take it by mouth. It's so easy to do that. So I'm not a fan of that way of delivering an artificial progesterone that has effects that are different also than actual natural bioidentical progesterone has. It's not a totally innocuous thing to give a progestin.
So along those lines, Susan Dominus herself in the article said she was offered the Mirena coil, and she was offered an estrogen patch, an estradiol patch, which would have been bioidentical and okay. And she didn't want to deal with all this equipment, she said. But what she settled on was birth control pills. Now, this is also heavily used in conventional medicine, giving peri and menopausal women birth control pills. So would you like to weigh in on that?
Yeah. There's some rationale, but the first thing that stands out to me is that someone who would administer a birth control pill just hasn't taken on the subject of menopause, perimenopause, treating women in perimenopause, hormone replenishment. They just haven't taken it on as a specialty. They haven't gotten the specialty training, or they wouldn't do that. If the birth control pill were the only tool I had, well, okay, you are adding estradiol in an artificial form, ethinyl estradiol, and women are deficient in estradiol, and okay, you are balancing it with a progestin. Once again, that's a more androgenic than it is progesterone-ish molecule. That is not the ideal replacement. If it's the only tool you had on the planet Earth, all right, I get it. But I would never do that. And it just betrays the primitive stage we're still in. It's okay. We'll learn. It's changing. But there's thousands and thousands of licensed healthcare providers now, so different than 30 years ago, that have received additional training in compounded bioidentical hormones. And my God, the theory has got some rationale to it. When a woman gets declining estrogen, it's not okay. And when a woman gets declining and falling and progesterone, it's not okay. And as you mentioned, Carol, there's also extremely significant the falling of testosterone. It's not okay. But why not replenish with precision? Same molecule that the ovary produces and dialed in, as Corinne was mentioning, by, to the individual patient because of the vast differences woman to woman. Birth control pills are so one dose fits all. And yeah, there's some variation in dosages. So I am not a fan of doing something that isn't state of the art, that doesn't serve the woman.
What Sherry and I used to do, you're going to laugh when you hear this, we used to read the Science Times on Tuesdays and on Fridays, and articles on nutrition would come out. And we'd look at them and we'd laugh to each other, and then we'd just start going after the article and how it was incorrect. Well, I remember Brody, who was their top nutritionist, was talking about bone health at the time. And so she said that there were all these different things you could do for it. And come to find out, she was on antihypertensive drugs. She was on statins. And then part of her article was the fact that she was going on bisphosphonates. Never a talk about balance or balancing her body or balancing hormones. Just these going right on to bisphosphonate. So what you see very often, most of the time, 90% of the time at least, in the times, is a relationship or a default to pharmaceuticals rather than a default to balance of your body. But one thing that was said that I heard differently in this article was that she was talking about how women don't like to talk about menopausal symptoms to their medical doctors. The one said, I want to take hormones because I want to feel younger and look younger. And her doctor snapped at her, this isn't an anti-aging drug. But at the same time, think about men and how withdrawn men are in relationship to their symptoms and their sufferings, sexual sufferings, when it comes to hormone imbalance. And that I know this is outside of the article, but I really thought about that when she talked about women don't like to talk about low libido or vaginal atrophy. But think about men. Men don't like to talk about their sexual inadequacies either as they're aging, when in actuality, it's just a lowering of their hormones and they're experiencing the hormonal imbalance.
You're so right. Actually, Susan does say in her article, well, if this was happening to men, we would have something done. But she's wrong about that. There are too many. Too many men are suffering and being ignored, or they're being put through some pretty torturous things like prostate biopsies on a routine basis that they might not need. It's a horror for men too, and I think that's kind of a crappy argument that men would be treated better because they absolutely are not. Dr. Rosensweet, do you want to weigh in on that?
Hello? That's what I thought I heard. I thought I heard someone click off by accident.
Oh, maybe he clicked off by accident. Maybe he'll come back on.
Okie dokie. But I think this is such an important review here in terms of looking at where this extreme fear was created. They're showing that they said in the Women's Health Initiative, increased blood clots. They're showing that there's no increased blood clots at all. They're saying that there was increased breast cancer. They have now controls and women on hormones for years that they're following, and there's no increased breast cancer. But you know what there is? There's reduced osteoporosis. There's a reduced bone fractures when we're dealing with natural hormones or even hormones. You have a reduced risk of bone fractures, and I see that in my practice. I had a woman that came in about 22 years ago, right around there, and her bones were so thin and so bad they wanted to instantly not even leave the office, start on the bisphosphonates. And she said, listen, I don't do well on chemicals. I'm not doing that. So she came to me and we started her on natural hormones. Now, I've had some tremendous successes with bone, literally in 60s. Women have a 9% bone increase. I watch their bones, and we watch their bones get stronger and healthier. And, this woman, she, over a few years, she had a trace increase. But they said, you know, if you sneeze, you're going to have a spinal fracture. Well, she had no fracture. She was very active. And now this is 20-some years later. her bones have not gone down at all or gotten thinner. They've slightly increased, ever so slightly. But what I think of, what would you rather have? Would you rather have a thin piece of steel that's flexible and moves as you move with you? Or would you rather have this beautiful piece of chalk that looks so good when you do an x-ray, but then just shatters? And that's the difference of what we're looking at when we're looking at natural therapies. And we're looking at the synthetic ones that we know creates brittle bones. And when they break, they break like old crystal when it breaks. All these little shards, and it shatters rather than breaks. And that is close, very difficult to heal. Very, if not in the closer to impossible. Carol?
I think Dr. Rosensweet's back on. Dr. Rosensweet? Can we hear you? No. Oh, he said he wanted to address some mail issue if he was on. He thought he was on. So I am continually to be amazed, because I do go to training programs on endocrinology and hormone training. Dr. Rosensweet himself conducts a training program.
Yes, he's a teacher.
Right. He's a teacher. He's an excellent teacher. And more people are really interested in this. I've been in events that might have 600 practitioners there trying to learn this. And I like to say it's really not that difficult. There's a couple really important things. Like I mentioned before, progesterone needs to be there. It's the first thing that's gone. You need to adjust, just as we discussed, you and I. No more of this, here, take this, and come back in 3 months and we'll discuss it, or come back in 6 months, we'll discuss it. One of the things we've done is we have forced people sort of to think they're indoctrinated, because pharma drugs have so many side effects. And if they go and complain about a side effect, they'll be told, oh, well, you just have to put up with it. You have a better benefit to risk ratio. And I tell you, when you're on bioidentical hormones, whether they're compounded, there's some FDA approved ones, if you're not at 100% relief of your symptoms, and I'm not kidding about this, 100% of symptom relief, you should be going back to your practitioner to see what can be adjusted. And this doesn't have to wait for your 3 month appointment, your 6 month appointment. If you have a good practitioner, they will work with you, particularly in the beginning where you need a little bit of hand holding. So women and men should demand 100% symptom relief from their therapies. And if they're not getting it, it's not good enough. Because I do know of a significant number of women who give up. Their doctors haven't worked with them. They're not feeling that great. They haven't adjusted the dosage to their needs, and they give up.
Dr. Carol, I wonder if you're going to hear me now.
Yes,
perfectly.
Great. Technical glitch there. Yeah, so many things you said. It's not hard. It's like anything else that professionals take on. You know, you've got some learning seminars to go to. You've got a certain number of patients to see. And with every patient, you learn more and more and more until you get really good at it. And that's who we encourage women to find, that there's a primary job I think women have, and that is to go shopping. That they want to find a healthcare provider that does care about hormones, that has done the additional trainings. And a tip-off would be they're going to be into compounded bioidentical hormones. In fact, when I say go shopping, you want to ask your friends, are they being treated with compounded bioidenticals? Who's doing it? Do you like them? or to go, there's 8,500, and correct me if I'm wrong, compounding pharmacists in the United States. If you find your local compounding pharmacy and it's not far from you, go into their actual building. Ask to speak to the pharmacist. They're the ones who are receiving prescriptions from local providers, and ask them, who would you recommend if your wife, you were going to send your wife or your spouse to get hormone treatment, who would you recommend?
That's excellent. I'm sorry to interrupt, but we're getting a message to start wrapping it up because we're at the end of your time.
Sure.
And Dr. Rosensweet, please give out any website that you'd like people to look you up at and get more information.
Yes, bright.org, B-R-I-T-E. I'm sorry, bright.live, B-R-I-T-E dot L-I-V-E, bright.live. There's a place to start, and you can get a link for a free PDF copy of my book, Happy Healthy Hormones. Corinne, maybe you could offer that to your audience.
Oh, we would love to.
Yeah, and it's a real roadmap of what do you go shopping for? Well, this is we'll tell you the kind of things that Carol's been saying, that Corinne's been saying. It's the roadmap for how you need to be treated, because we're still at a time where women have to be proactive to get the best treatment.
Thank you so much for being here with us. You really added to the conversation and helped us understand more clearly what we were reading and hearing and seeing and what we see with our patients. So thank you so much. We would love to have you back.
Thank you. My honor. My pleasure.
And Carol, thank you so much. When we're together, I always learn.
Yeah, me too.
And the audience, we want to thank the listeners because you support WBAI. And we will be back next week with another very informative topic. So
we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
In conclusion, I'd like to say, remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.